Welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show, the podcast that brings you the most inspiring and thought-provoking conversations each and every week. I'm your host, Hollis Chapin, and I am thrilled to have you join us on this exhilarating journey. On this show, we delve into the minds of visionaries, change makers, and trailblazers from all walks of life, from authors, entrepreneurs to athletes, artists, activists, and even astronauts. We leave no stone unturned in our quest to inspire and...
Hello, Matthew.
Hey, hi there, Hollis.
How you doing, sir?
Okay, fine. Hearing you loud and clear. That's great.
Yeah, I hear you perfectly. We got about a minute before we go live. I want to finish my prep, and then I'm going to mute you right now, and then I'm going to make you live in about a minute. Okay, sir?
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I'll stay by the phone.
Yeah. Okay, sir. Thank you. Perfect.
And empower our listeners. Our guests are not just your average run-of-the-mill celebrities. They're individuals who have overcome the odds, shattered barriers, and achieved phenomenal success. They share their secrets, successes, and even their failures, so you can learn from their journeys and apply their wisdom to your own life. Whether we're diving into personal development, authors, new novels, entrepreneurship, mental health, social justice, or the latest scientific breakthroughs, our discussions are always thought-provoking, challenging conventional wisdom, and pushing the boundaries of what's possible. But it's not just the guests that make this show special, it's you, the listeners. Your engagement, questions, and comments fuel every episode. We live for the aha moments, the goosebumps, and the inspiring breakthroughs that happen when we come together as a community. So grab your headphones, get ready for a mind-expanding experience, because on the Hollis Chapin Show, we believe that everyone has a story worth telling and a dream worth pursuing. Our mission is to inspire you to take that first step towards your own greatness. Mark your calendar, set your alarm, because every Tuesday and Friday a new episode drops, ready to empower, educate, and entertain you. Join us on this magnificent adventure, and together, let's unlock our limitless potential. Welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show.
Hello, and welcome to the Hollis Chapin Show. I am Hollis. Hey, happy Friday to y'all. We got a wonderful guest calling in. Excuse me. He's calling in from a long ways, and he'll tell you about that. So very pleased to have him here join us and talk about his latest book. Our guest is a throwback to days when writers were not typecast or forced to be known only for writing in one genre or format. He's multi, very talented man, very talented. This Brit-turned-Barcelonian who has learned Catalan on his own at age 19. I hope I didn't pronounce that too badly. Let's welcome to our show the international TV scriptwriter, award-winning novelist and journalist, Matthew Tree. Hello, sir. We're listening.
Hi there, Hollis. Thank you for that very complimentary introduction.
Oh, thank you. I try to look over the words and make sure I say it correctly. So if I mess some things up, I apologize. I get tongue-tied there. So thank you very much for joining us today. You're awesome. I know the time difference is there. So thank you. Kind of tell us more about yourself and your latest book, sir.
Yeah, sure. Where do I start? Okay. I guess all this started, I started to write in English when I was 18 years old, which is when I wrote my first novel, which fortunately has been lost completely. And about the same time, I fell in love with a woman who I was working with in London. And she turned out, I assumed she was Spanish, and I thought all Spanish people were the same. They all spoke the same language, etc. And then she was having problems with the immigration authorities in Britain. They wanted to throw her out of the country because she was basically an illegal immigrant at that period. This is the late 1970s. So we got married in secret. And she kept telling me that she was Catalan, that she spoke this language called Catalan, which I'd never heard of and had no interest in whatsoever. But I eventually went to Catalonia basically to meet my in-laws, because they, although the marriage was in secret, she told her sister told everybody else. And so I went there and I discovered this amazing kind of hidden culture, this language that nobody knew about, which everybody was speaking in the area. About 10 million people speak Catalan. And so I got interested in it. So I learned it, but This was not long after the Franco regime, the fascist regime in Spain. So there were no adult classes for learning Catalan. So I taught myself Catalan and sort of I immersed myself in Catalan. So we separated the way couples do. I went back to London, kept on writing, kept on getting rejection slip after rejection slip. I kept on blue tacking these rejection slips to my door. I was living in a squat in South London at the time to remind myself that I was not writing well enough. I knew I wasn't getting it. I didn't have a proper written voice. And so what I did was eventually I couldn't stand living in London anymore. Things were getting very difficult. Margaret Thatcher was in power. Young people like myself were going to be unemployed for a long time. So I moved back to Catalonia on my own. And a publisher there just suggested, if you have all these problems writing in English, finding your written voice, why don't you just try writing in Catalan? So I wrote a text in Catalan, which he liked and which he published. And then I published a novel in Catalan. Then I published some short stories, which won an award. I published another novel, which I won an award, which is also available in English. And I sort of went on from there. So I guess that leads up to the latest book, which is called We'll Never Know, which is a book which is a little bit of science fiction, a little bit of erotic fiction, but it's basically about a horrible sexist science correspondent working for a British newspaper who, through the experience that he has through the book, changes his attitude completely, 100%. Holly, sorry, I've gone on too long.
That's okay, that's perfect. But again, we're going to say bravo to you, because for the listeners out there, for the listeners who's going to listen and download this, what I take from that little story was the never quit, don't give up. You got creative, you had to get creative, you got to figure out a way to do it, because you were feeling more powerful as a writer, but you had to get creative on how to find your writing voice. So bravo to you. That's unbelievable. What a great little story right there. I love that. All right?
Great.
Yeah. So your book now, We'll Never Know. What inspired you to write your book, and what themes were you hoping to explore through the story?
Okay. Well, I've always been interested in secret government experiments, because they do them also in Britain and in many other European countries as well as the United States. So I put that into the book, because these things happen. This is real. There's no conspiracy theorizing going on here. And so the story is that this horrible sexist science correspondent is hounded by a woman who thinks her husband, who works in a government aerospace research center, is in danger. And she explains why, and eventually he gets pulled into this story because his curiosity gets the better of him. And the novel takes off from there. I also have a kind of personal interest in UFOs. I'm quite skeptical about them. I've read a lot of UFO literature. Most of it is disposable. But I myself, when I was 12 years old, I saw a UFO, and I wasn't the only one. I mean, it's that day, that night, in fact, because it was so real that I can still see it all these years afterwards. I still see it in my mind's eye whenever I bring up the subject. I was on a kind of holiday with another family, and we were in a little village in southeast England, quite.
Okay, we just lost Matthew, so we'll hopefully try to get him back. Matthew. Yes, okay, Matthew, I'm still alive. We kind of lost you, so see if you can call back in. All right, check back in, click back in, okay? What a great story he's telling us, though, about UFOs. That's what he writes about that. He writes about Holocaust. He writes about cults, psychotherapy, militias, and rapists, all kinds of stuff in his book. And again, that's a little story from what Matthew has talked about in the beginning. An introduction is amazing, right? So it's a point where hopefully Matthew is kind of checked back in, sir. But we lost him, so hopefully he realized that he's not on the air, and we'll see what happens there. But again, Matthew, I'm just going to read some more of his stories while he's kind of checking back in. Again, like I said earlier, he's an acclaimed award-winning author of over a dozen books. Beautiful. He has written for an English language television station. He's been a regular guest on television and radio programs. He has penned numerous newspapers and magazines articles. His books have been published in English, Spanish, and Catalan. In 1999, Matthew won the award to Ella Van Guan. I can't even pronounce these words, so I apologize for that. But he's won awards after awards. You can hear how talented he is and how passionate he is about writing. Okay, so Matthew, if you're out there, bud, give us a, you know, try it again. We kind of lost your link. There we go. Okay, so give it a shot. There you go, Matthew.
Okay, did we get cut off then?
We got cut off. You dropped the link or whatever. But I kind of filled in for you, talked about your history, talked about a lot of stuff about you. So we didn't miss a beat. We're on top of that. But sorry about that. I'm not sure how we got cut off, but we did. So kind of, you know, hold your phone in place and we'll go from there. But we're at a point where I was talking about, you know, the awards you won. You've written for multiple language television. That's outstanding. You've written a dozen books. That's outstanding. So I just love your ability to just persevere. That's an outstanding thing, okay? So get back on track here. The influence of his favorite writers. Who influenced you? Why they're your favorite writers? And what does that make you get up and be your why? Talk about your influence of your favorite writers.
Well, okay, two of them, in fact, two of the I collect them, in fact. I have the just about every book they've ever written are Americans. They're two Americans, Henry Miller and William Burroughs. And what I really liked about them was what they taught me is that you can do absolutely anything with writing. You can do anything you want. There are no rules except to write. And that's what I like. They both of them, they're very different writers, but they write with an incredible freedom. And they always somehow hit the nail right on the head, precisely because they're not worried about being rude, about being correct, about being this and that or the other, about belonging to a particular genre. They do exactly as they please. And that sort of gave me a feeling of freedom. And I thought, well, that's how I would like to write in English as well, with that meaning, with that kind of freedom.
Yeah, I like that. That freedom, that kind of free-flowing style. So I like that. Okay, so you travel a lot, and that kind of brings and makes your writing personal. It must break your heart what you see in the Ukraine, because I know you've been there and you've written about Ukraine, Tanzania, Belarus. Talk a little bit, not too much. We don't get too political, but your thoughts about Ukraine right now.
Yeah, in fact, it's personal. I have a Ukrainian friend in Kyiv. We stay in regular contact via phone. And, you know, he just explains what's going on. His particular job is working with a group of people. They deliver humanitarian aid to wounded soldiers in hospitals near the front line. He's sent me films of the rockets flying over Kyiv, the rockets sent by Russia. And it is absolutely, having been there in relative peacetime and seeing all this now, it's sickening, and it's so crazy. That's the thing, that's the word that comes to mind. It's just so crazy. None of this should be happening. There is absolutely no reason for Russia to be invading Ukraine. There's no point to it. It's absurd. At the very least, they should have tried diplomacy, which they never did, because for Putin, I suspect, I know people who sort of read Russian and stuff, and they reckon that for Putin, diplomacy is a form of weakness. So it's like, it's just totally unnecessary. All those deaths, all that killing, the invasion, the fear that it causes people. Even my friend, who's pretty strong-minded, says sometimes, he says, I just feel terrible. I have days when I just feel terrible. He's separated, of course, from his wife and kids, who, funnily enough, are living in England. It's just terrible.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know it's the end game of that. I don't understand. But again, that's another show. And it just, yeah, whatever. Okay. Your book, We'll Never Know. Explain the title and then tell more about it. And the cover, We'll Never Know. What's that mean?
We'll Never Know. It's about, it involves, put it like this, a secret government research center. Which is investigating some objects which look pretty much like UFOs, but they could be government-made, whatever. We don't know. We'll never know. There's a very shady figure behind these, behind this research. We'll never know anything about him, but he's sinister and quite intriguing. And even more suspicious is the fact that the people doing the research on these objects are having very unfortunate fatal accidents as soon as they retire. So all this is investigated by two journalists, one who is a feminist investigative journalist, and the other one who is a extremely sexist science journalist. And so the story goes on like that. It's based partly, but only partly, and especially at the end, from a personal experience when I was 12 years old, when I saw a UFO in Southeast England. Not just me, but with a whole load of other kids and adults. We were all standing together, and it was the adults who pointed it out to the kids, us kids, and they were just as astounded as we were, and that's what made me think, whoa, this is something real. And it was real. I mean, it was a physical object with a few lights strung across it, bright light at one end, and it just stayed there in the sky, absolutely motionless, absolutely silent. I've never forgotten it all through these years. And I thought, okay, the story takes us to the moment when the main character sees this object. But the rest of the story is fiction.
Beautiful. At this time, Matthew, tell us where we go after the show to learn more about you and to get your wonderful book. Where do we go?
Okay. I'm sorry, Hollis. I didn't quite get that. What would you like me to do?
Yeah, just tell us what we buy on Amazon. We got a URL. You know, where do we go? You got a website you want to tell us about and promote?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. I'm on Wikipedia, for example. If you want information about all the published titles, there are 13 in Catalan and 6 in English. Amazon is the best place for getting most of the English language novels. Any Amazon site, just about, in any country. My website, actually, Hollis, this is like my weak point. I'm so bad at websites. I've had 3 different ones over the years, all of them done for me by friends who are professional website designers. And I'm working on a new one at the moment because there's new material coming out and stuff. But the websites I had have gone silent. They're not active anymore. They're not live.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, yeah, I'm kind of a bit embarrassed about that, if I have to be honest.
Not a problem. I can understand the difficulties of website. Trust me. Yeah. I'm constantly trying to tweak mine and update it and keep it live, stuff like that. So I understand. No big deal. I mean, you're writing your books and that's a big enough challenge as it is. So good for you.
Yeah. I publicize them through Facebook pages, through what's now called X so on. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So kind of explain to us and kind of help other authors out the challenges of title and how it ties into the overall narrative. Okay. You talked a little bit about that. So kind of go deeper into that. You kind of put yourself in the shoes of maybe you're talking to new authors out there and you want them to sit there and elaborate on their title, kind of elaborate on the significance of how it all ties in together. Because I know, you know, you've shared a lot of it, but put yourself in a shoe where you're going to help other authors out.
Okay. I'll deal with the title business in just a moment. In fact, I've had first-time authors coming up to me here in Catalonia asking me for advice, and I always say exactly the same thing, and I say it three times. You know, I just say, be stubborn, and then be stubborn. It's something that you mentioned earlier. You know, don't give up. Just keep going. Don't be discouraged, because it's normal to get rejections. Get used to getting rejected, because a time will come when you won't get rejected. It could take 5 years, it could take 10, it could take longer, it could take less. It doesn't matter, you know, just go on doing what you're doing. And as for titles are interesting things, because a boring title, and there are lots of boring titles, really does put readers off. So the title has to be a little bit intriguing, but it has to chime perfectly with the content of the book, the basic content of the book. So I use titles like, one of my novels is called Snug. Another one is called The Last Person in the World. Another is called Just Looking. And the idea is that these are titles which fit into the book, but they're also just a little different, a little odd, which tends to work. I don't have readers kind of forgetting my titles, which is usually a good sign, you know.
Perfect. Do you do the title first and then start writing, or you start writing and then oh this could be a good title? What's your process for that? Because I think it's very intriguing how you say it's so important to have a strong title. What's your process of when you start to put the title on it?
Okay, funny you should say that, because what I do is I go right into the book and start writing, say, the first chapter, the first two chapters, or the first few pages, whatever. And when I feel I've really got the voice of the book down and controlled, that's when the title just appears. It just appears. And so, you know, I call it that. I usually don't have provisional titles. The real title appears quite early on. But first, at least I have to write maybe 10, 20, 30 pages. And then it just goes click, and I know what the book is going to be called.
Beautiful. When's the best time that Matthew writes? Are you a morning person, afternoon person, just before you go to bed person? When does Matthew write the best?
I am absolutely not a morning person. You know, I'm not even, you know, I suggest to people they don't even try and talk to me before 12 o'clock, you know. I usually write in the afternoons, because I have, I'm self-employed, so I have other jobs. I'm writing scripts for a TV series. I have a couple of regular columns, stuff like that. I do sometimes literary translations, which take an incredible amount of time up. Take up an incredible amount of time. But the idea is when I'm writing fiction, it's like, I think Hemingway said something similar. You kind of know instinctively when your quota is finished for that day. It's like you write a certain amount, and then you just think, hey, I'm not going to go on, because I've kind of reached my limit. And if I go on, I'm not going to have anything to work on tomorrow. So you kind of leave it knowing that you can go back to it tomorrow and just pick up from where you left off, something like that. It's an instinctive thing. There's no rules, no exact number of words or anything like that.
Beautiful. Yeah, I know you're a script writer. Have you thought about putting some of your stuff on TV, as a series, as a movie, as a television series? Have you thought about that? Because I have a lot of authors who I'm kind of sit there and talk to them about getting stuff on, you know, Yoohoo and all kinds of stuff, because people are looking for content. Has Matthew thought about that?
Oh boy, have I thought about that, Hollis. Yes, very much so. And I'm still working on it. I have a Norwegian friend who's produced two full-length feature films which are on Netflix, and he read one of my novels, and he likes it so much, we're going to talk, put it like that. The thing is, with that whole thing with films and series is, you know, there are 12 reasons, there may be 12 good reasons for making a book into a series or a film, but then there are 35 reasons for not making it into a series or a film. It's a very fragile kind of world. And I would love to do it. In fact, I do have a contact in California through an American friend of mine here who lives here, who happens to be the wife of the producer of Matt Damon. And so she gets my books and she accepts them and she reads them. But I'm not holding my breath because I know how that world works a little bit. I have a friend in London who's a professional scriptwriter for fiction, full-length feature films. And I mean, the stories he tells about, you know, something getting so close to being made, and then at the last minute, for some ridiculous, trivial reason sometimes, it just gets dropped. The whole project gets dropped. So it's complicated. It's complicated. Yeah. But yeah, I've been told by loads of readers, in fact, that most of the English language novels would make good series or good films. And also good series and good films. And this was told to me by someone from Kirkus Reviews in the States. Most of them are based, in fact, originally on books.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I'm going to sit there and pick my brain too, to sit there and get you connected, because I'm very excited. I mean, you got your script writer already, stuff like that. And most times what defer people is the ability to write a screenplay from their novels. That is really tough. So a lot of them kind of walk away from that. But I know you have some skills with that. So, hey, you know, who knows?
Who knows?
Okay. So, Matthew, technology plays a significant role in shaping the world of novels. Okay. The world of novels. What's your thoughts on AI? I know you're True Blood, True Writer. What's your thoughts with the AI? What's going on now? I use AI a lot myself, to be transparent. What's your thoughts on it?
I tend to avoid it. I always say, in fact, I'm going to get a T-shirt made probably saying my intelligence is not artificial. because, I've been reading, there's some guy who writes for the Times Literary Supplement who has a whole thing about artificial intelligence. And to prove that it's still not good enough, he like puts in basic information, like, for example, about D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover. And the AI bot assumes that Lady Chatterley's Lover is the name of an author. So, you know, these mistakes keep getting made, but it's early days yet. And I think it's going to be a bit like the internet. I don't know if you remember when the internet really got going and there were loads of debates about whether it was positive, whether it was negative. And we now know after all these years that it can be both things at the same time. Yeah. And I think that's going to be the situation with AI. I think it can be incredibly useful and also incredibly dangerous or poisonous as well. So I think that's what's going to happen. But, you know, we'll see in the future what goes on. I know there are artists now who are using AI to make pictures which are not bad and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, you know, there were people who used to say that if you write a novel on a computer, that doesn't count. You know? I mean, you know, it's like we've gone way beyond that stage by now, you know. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's not something that particularly worries me or bothers me or that I think about much at the moment.
Thank you for sharing that. You know, I look at some of your reviews. This probably been years ago, but when you got your first review, what was your feeling? Then you got your first negative review, and you probably never got one. What's your thoughts? Kind of help out, again, the new authors, how to handle reviews, because that's a big part of what we do now online. How do you handle that?
Yeah, with the stuff in Catalan, I've had mainly good reviews, or sometimes slightly indifferent reviews, where they just give a description of the book without really telling you much about, you know, what they think about it. Or you get no reviews, which is really depressing. You know, that is like, it's like the book just disappears. It's a William Burroughs phrase. It disappears in a little whirl of dust of indifference. But like with the English language books, I have had the best reviews I've ever had in my life. And they really, you know, it's like you walk around feeling like $1 million for a while, and then you think, don't be silly, get on with the book you're working on. You know, it's like that book is out there. People want it. They can get it. But it is nice to get good reviews. But I stand by what one writer said. He was an English writer, and I cannot remember for the life of me his name. But he said, I usually forget what the good reviews said, but when I had a bad review, I remember it for the rest of my life. And that's the problem. And I know writers here who've had much worse reviews, really nasty reviews, in fact, almost personally nasty reviews. And it upsets them very deeply. And I think it's important to like not attach too much importance either to the good ones and especially not to the bad ones.
Outstanding. Well said. And it brings it to a point where, I mean, I'm a former athlete. I'm a football player, loving watching athletes. And the best ones, the ones who are superstars, the ones who get paid big money, they do well after they get beat or after they have a bad game. So you got to be so mentally tough that you can forget about the mistakes and carry on, you know, because yeah, I'm the same thing. If I get a bad review, oh, that haunts me forever. You know, it's just like I can't sleep. I get shook up. You know, should I be doing this? So the point where I got to go back to my sports states and say, okay, when you didn't play well, what did you do? I worked harder and got rid of that negative feeling as soon as possible because I wouldn't be there if I didn't deserve to be there. You know, so same thing with these athletes, the same thing with these writers. If you didn't, you know, if you didn't write the book and you get out there, it wouldn't happen. So we got to forget. You know, you got to forget as soon as possible and just carry on. You know, because some people, especially now with the internet, people just be nasty, You know what I mean? So it's one where, oh, God. So that's what drives me crazy with the internet and people sitting behind a computer. It's like, you really have no reason to say that about anybody. You know, at this point where some people just do it. This is what they get their kicks out of doing. You know, they don't write books. They don't put themselves out there. Boy, they can give you a bad review and hide from it. So we gotta carry out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's very easy to do that, you know, especially because these people are usually anonymous. They don't say who they are. They don't say where they're coming from. And they just raise a lot of unpleasant stuff, which can actually get upsetting if you let it upset you, you know, not only about writing, but even about you personally, you know. I mean, this is terrible, you know. I mean, I got, I don't know, I've got, because I speak Catalan and stuff, sometimes you get these very right wing Spanish centralist nationalists in Madrid and other parts of Spain. Actually, Madrid is very open-minded. But they've written stuff to me, people I don't know from Adam, you know, saying, you know, go back to your country, that kind of stuff, you know, and it's very unpleasant, yeah.
Hey, Matthew, because I've never heard of Catalan either. Can you say a phrase in Catalan? That's because I've never heard it before. So go ahead and say it, if you could.
It's clacasi. Okay, here we go. It's clacasi. Puc di qualsevol cosa en català, el que vulguis.
That's so cool. Thank you for doing that. I've never heard it before either. So that's cool. That's great. Yeah, and you self-taught yourself that. That's unbelievable too. Okay, so before we close the last comment, please tell us again, where do we go to learn more about Matthew, to learn about his books? Where do we go after the show?
After the show? You mean...
Amazon, we go to Amazon, I know you don't have a website, we go to Facebook. So this is a time to promote your stuff. And where do we go after the show to buy your book, to learn more about you?
To Amazon, because on Amazon, they've got some of the reviews, they've got some of the readers' reviews as well. Almost all of my books have got at least, one of them has got 24 reviews on Amazon, but all of them have got two or three at least. but also a description of the book, which is usually the blurb that I write myself, because I try and make blurbs concise so that people really get an idea of what the book is about without being too long, without being boring. So I think that would be the best way for them to get the book. There is a bookshop in Barcelona which does online sales, but I think it's easier in the United States just for people to get the book off Amazon.
Outstanding. Hey, Matthew, in closing, ultimately, what impact do you hope your book will have on readers in closing?
Okay. I what I always want with every single book, including the latest one, is I would like it to make something happen to the reader. In other words, they can find it funny, they can find it interesting, it can make them think about stuff that maybe they never thought about before. I don't really care, as long as it does something, it makes something happen in the reader's mind. Because I always think that books which leave you exactly the same as when you finish, as when you were when you started the book, just really aren't worth the bother. You know, I want something to happen to the reader when they read it. And even if it's just feeling really entertained, that's good enough for me, you know. But it's something happening. That's what is make something happen to the reader would be the aim of all the books, and including the last one, We'll Never Know.
Matthew Tree, thank you so much for joining us today. You're awesome. Great stuff. Continue what you're doing. We're definitely going to promote you. We have channels on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. We're going to put this show on that. We're going to promote you, because we want you to sit there and help the readers get something out of your book. Matthew, thank you.
Hollis, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll talk to you real soon, sir, okay?
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Take good care.
Bye-bye. Matthew Tree, guys, huh? Give him. Yeah. I think he deserves that same ovation. Outstanding. Make sure you follow up, guys, okay? Go to his Amazon page, go to his Facebook stuff, and do what you got to do. Show him some love from the Hollis Chapman Show. That's what we do, okay? But he's UFOs. He's seen one. Holocaust, cults, psychotherapy, malicious, rapists. He's written it, all right? He's an international TV scriptwriter, award-winning novelist, journalist, Matthew Tree. I got to keep on saying it. It's awesome. Worth the read, okay? So make sure you guys do that. Wonderful man. He lives overseas, so he's calling us at 7:30 at night. That's pretty cool, too, okay? You guys have a great weekend. We have nobody on books for Tuesday, but I'll be here. We'll talk and give you some great content, all right? Have a great weekend, everybody, and let's see if we can... Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Happy Friday. Have a great, safe weekend. Make sure you follow up with Matthew Tree. Read about his story. Read about him being overseas. Read about his all his books. And as always, I'll see you next time.